Hello, and welcome to Tales from the Periphery with me, your host, Mike Whittaker. And here we are, back from Salute, where I spent a very pleasant 7 hours with Rich Cook, with Sam Hall, with Dan, Josh and Rob from our club, basically demonstrating Alpha Strike to any and all who'd come and watch, which was great fun. We at one point actually had to split the double map Alpha Strike airfield in two in order to fit enough people in who wanted to play. The big sprawling Battle of Camden Hole lasted the whole day. We had any number of people join in. I think Rich actually lost count of how many people he was playing against. It was all good fun. The lovely folks at Leisure Games of Finchley sold out of everything they brought, with the possible exception of a couple of Gothic boxes. Gothic boxes? Yeah, that works. Sadly, Enfield Gamers didn't bring anything, otherwise they'd have probably sold out of that as well, because pretty much Leisure Games had sold out by midday, bar a few odds and sods. Excellent day. We had a great time. A few snippets of news. The new Battletech core rules have been announced, along with the new core box set and the starter set. I'll be discussing those with my guest fairly shortly, so no more about that here. Also, for those of you who are fans, supporters and customers of Fortress Games, they have just introduced a loyalty program. I will be sticking the details for that in the show notes, because clearly, if you're anything like me, you're probably going to be taking shameless advantage of it. Other than that, there'll be the usual update on events and clubs and stores that are playing the game on the back end of the interview. But I think for now, let's just dive in and get on with the interview. Right, I promise I'm actually going to stop being surprised when I say this soon, but I have a guest. It is my good friend John Reed, from honorary member of Peterborough War Games Club, I think is a fair way of putting it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
How are
you? Yeah, they're in spirit.
Yes, we miss you. But at least you're in this country at the moment. How are you, anyway?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm here. I'm caught up, which is the thing that was causing me a problem for most of January and February. So hopefully we'll get a few more episodes out soon. I am hoping to have Josh Dirksen back soon, because he wants to come in. He actually wants to come and talk about Snowblind.
Yeah, that'd be great, Josh. Josh, yeah. It was a great interview. Yeah, got a lot to say.
It was really good fun. Anywho, you are a newcomer on this podcast, and you know what that means. Being a listener, you get to do you get the third degree. So, first question, and the one we do like to start with: how did you get into gaming, and how did you get into Battletech?
Well, as most British men of a certain age are, I got into it through 40K back in the day, back as a kid. Around 10, 11 years old, my friend showed me it, and it was the coolest thing. I absolutely loved it. and when I was playing 40K, I came across a demo for a game called MechWarrior 4, and it just clicked. It was like everything. It was like, yes, this is my thing. This is my absolute jam. And I saw there was a Battletech, like a board game version, like a miniatures game. I was like, oh, this would be amazing. And then I saw the models, and I thought, ah, okay. And I had nowhere to. Yeah. And you know, it was, you know, I was comparing it to these 40K models, and all my friends are playing this game, and I don't even know where to buy the books, which, you know, is a cyclical issue sometimes in the UK. And yeah, so it's something in the back of my mind. Like, I love the universe, I love the system, I love the games, I love the mechs, I loved everything about it. But I just, it just was something that I couldn't engage with. And, you know, I tried Mega Mech and things like that, but it's not the same as playing on the tabletop. So that was kind of my introduction back in like 2001 or so to the universe, and always played the MechWarrior games, always played the Mech Commander games. And then this might surprise you, actually. My first game of the tabletop was under a year ago. We were during COVID. I kind of got back into MechWarrior 5 and things like that, and then I ended up seeing on Amazon of all places a beginner box, and I saw the sculpt for the Vindicator, and that just sold me instantly. I was like, yes, this is what I've been waiting 25 years for. And so I bought the box and I got the models, and I was like, this is my first models in 10 years or so. And I said, right, I just need to find someone to play with. And therein lied the rub, really, was I was out in the UAE in the Middle East in Dubai, and I went online and I typed in BattleTech in the UAE, and there was nothing, absolutely nothing at all.
Off
So
we to
yes,
war later.
yeah. I've only been playing the tabletop for just under a year for my first actual game, which I don't know if that invalidates me as a guest. I don't know if I'm allowed to continue, but
Gosh, no,
yeah,
absolutely
but I've been
not.
into the universe for decades, and it's just the best, isn't it?
It is. I mean, talking to Josh last time, his first games of BattleTech were mostly because he got fed the fire hose by Randall Bills and told, "You're doing the Aces game, you better learn to play." So,
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
there's quite a lot of folks who haven't been doing this as long as. So were your first games actually at our club, or did you have to get a couple in before then?
No. My first games were with a guy called Florian, actually. He's kind of my main playing partner in the UAE still to this day. He'd played back in the early 90s, I think. But yeah, we managed to find each other on the tabletop, the worldwide map of BattleTech players. And I reached out to him, and
Sweet.
we kind of tentatively met at his place, and yeah, and it's I've been playing ever since.
Excellent. Right, so on to the quick fire round. Here comes the fun. Classic or Alpha Strike?
Oh, classic, it has to
And
be for
why?
me.
Really?
I love the crunchiness, I love the depth, I love the mechs kind of, that gritty feel of them falling apart. It probably even goes back to just my entryway through the MechWarrior games, where you'd have four mechs and that'd be your lance and that'd be it. But yeah, classic is the thing that's just captured me. I like Alpha Strike, it's good fun. I love Aces, but yeah, classic's the one.
Okay, toys on the table, painted or don't have to be.
Ooh, I always like to make sure mine are painted, but I wouldn't expect that of other people. We're busy, we've got lives, we've got different priorities, and BattleTech is BattleTech. You can use, it's the old cliche, you can use bottle caps with arrows on, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. All the tokens out of the expansion packs or whatever. Yeah,
Oh,
absolutely.
the cardboard
Right.
cutouts, I want to play a game with them. They look a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think Dan and Josh down the club have loads because they were not. I mean, until we managed to teach him how to do Slapshot, Dan just didn't paint, and he was forever digging out the card standees. But they're really surprisingly effective. Right, favorite era.
Oh, that's a real tough one. Do you know what? I love the Ilk Clan era. I love it. I love the variety. I
Ooh.
love all the options. The lore's getting there, but yeah, I like where things are going.
Right, okay. And then favorite faction?
Oh, that's so hard. It's got to be mercenaries. It has to be mercenaries. And again, this is me like vocalizing BattleTech through, the old MechWarrior games, but. I
Yeah, I get
just love that
that.
idea of a cobbled together band of rogues just getting by, trying to do the right thing. Maybe.
On a good day, yeah. Favorite unit with it, I guess that's going to be a mercenary unit of some sort then, is it?
I would say I really like Snords Irregulars. I like the kind of the way that's gone. But also the Grey Death Legion are just classic, aren't they, really?
They are, aren't they? You can't. You can, I mean, if you ever even just dipped into the novels, then they are. I think everybody certainly. If you go to someone and you say, "What should I read first?" They'll say, "Read the Grey Death Legion, then read the Stack Bolts."
I was going to say, shout out to the Lyrans though for the best paint. That blue and white is just us. Oh, it's such
Just
so
classic, isn't it?
classic.
All right, favorite mech.
Oh, that changes weekly, doesn't it? At the moment, I love the gargoyles.
Yes.
The gargoyle's great. I love the gargoyle a lot. But it has to be back in the day, the MechWarrior 4 demo, going all the way back. It's got to be the awesome. I just remember this absolute brick with just three PPCs, and it just would not go down. And yeah, it's just, it's awesome. The awesome's awesome.
You should see the Kodiak I had to fight last night. Oh, dear. Colin turned up with a very, very brutal short-range Kodiak.
I had nothing to do with that list I've got, yeah.
And it was painful. Okay. Favourite novel, if you read them?
Favourite novel? Do you know what? I listen to more of the audiobooks than reading the novels, but I'd have to say the Grey Death Legion books are pretty good, but Shrapnel and the short stories are what I really love at the moment.
All right.
Yeah, the Shrapnel, you get like a little slice of life, you get a bit of humour in there, like it's not trying to be too deep. It's just a fun little slice, short little segments. Big fan of Shrapnel.
Yeah, I don't have enough time. I have a large backlog of Shrapnels to read. Yeah. And I think I can guess the answer to this last one. Well, second to last one. Favourite of the video games?
Oh, MechWarrior 4 Mercenaries. There's no doubt in my mind.
How did I know you were going to say that?
Yeah. I started with Vengeance. Vengeance was good. You know, the linear story and stuff, but Mercenaries was just mm-hmm. like, yeah. Yeah, I dread to think how many hours I've put into that.
Have you been playing 5 and 5 Clans yet?
5, yeah, I played 5. Clans I haven't got into yet, I haven't been able to. But yeah, 5 is good. 5's good. It's good. What's really interesting is because I came up in that era, that MechWarrior 4 era with the Unseen. So, you know, I'd come across them like a Marauder and I'd be like, what's this? Like, you know, what sort of weird shaped thing is this? And it just wouldn't make sense to me. And things like a Warhammer as well. I was like, what? What's this mech doing here? And obviously, you learn as you go on that, oh, these are the classics. These are the OGs.
Anywho, which leads on to the Kickstarter. Did you? Either of them, for that matter.
I was too late. I was too late for the Kickstarter.
Oh no! Both of them.
Yeah, which is probably fortunate looking at how long it's taken to fulfil the UK, and I can't imagine that the MENA region would be any better. But yeah, I've got all my boxes. You know, I've got my Mercenaries box. I've got all the boxes. But yeah, no Kickstarters for me, sadly. It's probably for the best, but.
Probably best for the wallet. Yeah.
Financially, yeah. I meant to add that on.
Yeah. Okay. So, right. So, I think we've got a pretty good idea of where you stand. Now, am I right? You are Dubai's only demo agent?
Yeah. I think I might be the only one in the whole Middle East, North Africa region, as far as I'm aware.
Cool. Awesome. So, we'll skip over the current unpleasantness, which is just one of those things that I guess you've had to deal with. But how did that get started? I mean, obviously you're working out there, and how's it gone on?
Yeah, well, it started initially just by me trying to find people to play with. There was you know, very little online community or any mentions even on Google search. So I was trying my best to find players and people to play with, and I thought, okay, well, you know. I came over to the UK and you could find play groups everywhere, really. And it was really interesting how you'd go from, you know, group to group, and it would be this core of players who'd be playing together for years and years and years. And due to kind of the transient nature of expats out there, you just can't build that sort of community very easily in that environment. So it took a while to kind of think, well, what am I going to do to get players? How am I going to get to play the game more? Because I love this game. I want to play it more. And it kind of dawned on me that, well, why am I not that kind of that guy who's setting things up? Why am I not that guy who's building something? You know, I look to you, Mike, the way you're involved with Peterborough War Games Club, and, you know, what you do and what you give is amazing there, but it provides so much for so many people. And I thought, well, why can't I be that guy?
Why not, indeed? So how do you go about finding players?
That's a really good question. It's really interesting how many groups...
As I said to Josh, I'm allowed one good question an episode.
Yeah, it's. I mean, a lot of it is just putting yourself out there and just playing loads and loads of intro games and, you know, going up to people and saying, hey, this is Battletech. Does it look cool? Do you like the look of it? You know, playing with my friends in public places and just being as welcoming as we can. You know, some people play it and love it. Some people play it and it's not for them. And, you know, it's just one of those things where... You're kind of, there's two approaches really. The first is just trying to draw people in, just try and create a buzz, create that Instagram, you know, get the game out there, and have somewhere for people to go. So if they're searching for Battletech in the UAE or Battletech in Dubai or Abu Dhabi, then, you know, there's links there for them to go to. There's people for them to connect with. And then the other part is finding the existing playgroups. You know, as this journey's kind of gone on, I've bumped into loads of people where they're like, oh, yeah, me and my five friends, we play Alpha Strike like every other month. Or, oh, yeah, I used to play that back in the 80s and I'd love to try it again sometime. And, you know, that's kind of the way it's gone, is just kind of finding those existing players and drawing them together so we're kind of building that community. And then again, just drawing in as many new players as possible.
Do you have local game shops? Or game cafes or venues?
Yeah, so there's two kind of main places we go to. So we've got a place called Back to Games, which has a few locations scattered around the Emirates. That's kind of your more traditional tabletop store. They're selling 40K, they're selling, you know, loads of board games, they're selling Magic, all of that sort of stuff. And then the other is kind of the board game cafes, which are a lot more kind of, I guess, D&D focused and things like that. Mm-hmm. And depending where you go, you kind of get a different response from people. In the D&D cafes, we'll get loads and loads of people who kind of, you know, they'll look at it, they'll look at the record sheets and they'll be like, oh, that's kind of cool. I like that. That's kind of blending together. You know, you get people who say, oh, I played this 20 years ago and I'd love to play it again. And, you know, and then they're like, oh, we don't have the time. And this is kind of another factor that, due to the nature of the place, you know, people are out there to work and there's limited time available. We've got so many people say, oh, I'd love to join you, but I've got to keep my D&D campaign going, or oh, I've only got a limited time, I have to do this. but yeah, and then you've got, like I said, the Back to Games, the traditional sort of gaming shops, where again, you get people just looking over your shoulder and saying, hey, what's that? That looks pretty cool. And you kind of show them the primer booklets from Game of Armored Combat or the Mercs box and try and draw people in that way. And again, loads and loads and loads and loads of intro games.
Do you find the lore suckers people in?
For some people, yeah,
the whole
definitely.
Just massive spread of the universe.
Yeah, what I love as well is there's something within that universe that everyone can connect with and enjoy. So if they're into that kind of Kuritan kind of imagery, that kind of big Japanese kind of thing, you can show mm-hmm. them the new Kuritan box set, and they'll look at those. You know, they'll look at the Akuma with the Oni mask, and they'll be like, "Oh, that's the coolest thing! I love that. That's the one I'd want." Or you can show them, you know, some pirate stuff, and they'll be like, oh, these guys are just going around just like, you know, old swashbucklers, basically. Yeah, I love that. I want to do that. You know, whatever someone's into, there's something for them in the universe. And a lot of the time it's just asking them, hey, like, you know, what do you think's cool? What sort of stuff are you into? And then they'll say, you know, they'll tell me, I'll say, oh, did you know there's this faction? Or did you know there's, you know, the Magistry, if you're into cat girls, like whatever, like we can find something for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I found one of the things actually is very useful, I think, as you said, is as a demo agent, I've picked up several Clan Invasion boxes, several Game of Armored Combat boxes, because I've got a couple of them painted up that I can just start off with an Armored Combat game. I've actually been giving away some of the primers, some of the lore primers, to really keen people, just to sort of draw them in further.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, and I keep a copy of Universe handy when I'm running demos, if anybody just wants to dip in and drool.
Oh, yeah. The amount of people I've met where they've kind of, you know, they've been kind of looking at you from the other side of the cafe or the other side of the board game show. We say, hey, you know, have a look at this, see if you like it, come back in a few minutes, and they'll come back with questions like, hey, so what are these guys about? Or, hey, what's this mech? This mech looks really cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a fantastic
It does
tool.
Almost sell itself, doesn't it?
It really does when you can get people, you know, through that door. And again, it's a niche within a niche, right? It's, you know, it's people who love tabletop wargaming, but they love this kind of crunchy aspect to it. And yeah, it's the universe itself is amazing if people can find out about it. Again, this is me going back again, but, you know, the old manuals you used to get with the MechWarrior 4 games, they were just like, I devour them for hours and hours. It was just so like, you know, it suckered you into that world, and that's what I think keeps Battletech going.
Yeah, absolutely. So have you managed to run events at all?
Yeah, we've had a couple of small events out there. The last event where we were hoping to bring together, we had about 12 people signed up for it, which for us is like a huge number. Got interrupted rather rudely by some missiles. But yeah, Oops. We've had a few events before that. And yeah, again, it's just a case of sort of finding, you know, what do people want to do? What are they into? What's going to draw people together? You know, the time is a big limit out there for people. And if you could create an event that appeals to them. So we've had some stuff where, you know, we've had 30, 25 custom mechs, you know, because there was a couple of guys where that's what they were really into, that's what they remember playing. It's like, okay, cool, let's build an event, let's get people together, let's do that. And, you know, some people love urban mechs, so the last event we ran was, you know, an Urby Derby, urban rec, where, you know, you roll for a random Urby, you get to take a model home, you get to, you know, shoot AC-20s everywhere. It was great.
Cool. So how easy is it to get stock out there?
That depends what stock you're after. So interestingly, it's often a lot easier than the UK. A lot of stock that we buy comes from Amazon. Amazon.ae carries a game of Armored Combat. They carry Alpha Strike. The algorithm sends prices as low as about 30 quid for those boxes at times. So it can be really easy to get people into.
Nice.
And of course, Ares and Fortress will ship to us. You know, it's again, often cheaper to do that than it would be to ship to the UK. So we're really fortunate in that sense. But in terms of being able to say to someone in a shop, hey, there's a starter box over there, go buy it. That's just not something we can do.
No, but you're very much reliant on mail order, are you?
Yeah, absolutely. But we're hoping with the new core boxes, you know, we can convince the distributors, hey, you know, you guys could buy 20 of these boxes and me and my friends, we're going to buy at least 15 of them. Because just getting that on the shelves, that's going to raise the profile and, you know, it's going to get people searching on the internet and that's going to help build everything.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. So, and obviously now you're back over here for perfectly understandable reasons.
Temporarily, hopefully. But yeah.
It's nice to have you back. But it was originally, I guess, not going to be while you're back, but when you were supposed to be back, you have an event planned, I gather.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've put together the Lincoln BattleTech Open. It's an open format tournament which has a very specific structure. I don't know if you want to dive into that, but again, the idea
let's dive into that because we haven't really talked about the open because are we absolutely honest? It's not my favourite format, and that's just because I like list building, I like painting, and I like you know, being able to design my forces for what the things I want to do. But I know it floats a lot of people's boats, and it is in some ways it's a very pure test of your ability to pilot battle mech. So, do tell.
Yeah. Okay. So the open format is pretty straightforward. Instead of creating your own list like you were talking about, you get provided for each round a set of mechs, and you can choose which ones you want from a predetermined list. And there's a few reasons I decided to go for an open format. I think the biggest one for me is it reduces the number of feels bad moments. So, you know, you've put this time and effort into building a list and come into an event and you just get crushed from deployment. You just haven't gone cheesy enough. You just haven't. There's so many opportunities for those feels bad moments, you know, and things where people are getting confused over the mission rules and like, oh, well, I thought we had to get the objective over here. And they said, oh, no, you can't get the objective there till next round. And it just, for me, it was a case of simplification. You know, the less moving parts there are, the easier it is for people to focus on having fun, enjoying themselves. And it's also much easier for me. You know, there's a bit more work creating those mech lists at the start, but, you know, I'm not having to spend the whole day explaining rules. I'm not having to go over every list with a fine tooth comb. I'm not having to worry about pairing people up when, you know, one person's full of clam pulse and, you know, how much clam pulse should I allow? Is it 50 points? Is it 40 points? So, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons to the two types, but for me, it reduces those feels bad moments.
This is beginning of August, isn't it?
Yeah, this will be August the 1st. We've only got 2 tickets left as the time of recording, so it's been pretty popular so far.
Excellent. How many are you expecting then? I've just found you. I've just found the Best Coast pairings page. So 2 out of 20. That's pretty good going.
Yeah, it's not bad. I'm tempted to open it up some more, but we'll see how it goes with 21st. But the main purpose of it, more than anything, is just like the work I'm trying to do in the UAE, is just bringing people together, the local community. You know, there's little bands of 2 or 3 players in this village and 2 or 3 players in this town. And it's just the idea that we're going to bring everyone together. Everyone here loves BattleTech. You can make those connections. You can see, oh, I like playing with this guy. Oh, this guy's cool. You know, oh, this person's amazing. You know, they were really fun to play with. They smashed me, but it was great. We all had a good time. And again, that's just going to kind of build and grow that community in the area, really.
Mm. And so how many of your players are actually local and how many have been lured from further afield?
It depends what you mean by local. So Lincoln's a, you know, it's not massively central. But I'd say, you know, I'd say within a 20-mile radius, I'd say probably 50%, 60% of the players are quite local. That's local.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's not bad for a lot of people as well. It's their first tournament as well. It's the first time they've played anything competitively. So yeah, it's really good to get that feedback from the local community. You know, even traveling to pick up games, I'm having people say, "Oh, you need to sign up for this tournament in Lincoln. It's on the 1st, and we're all looking forward to it." I'm like, "Oh yeah, I've heard about it. Yeah, yeah, I've heard it's going to be good." So yeah,
quite fun then. So you've got a round that is basically Madstroke Cat, Timberwolf, Nova Cat, Mad Dog, Summoner, and Timberwolf again. Basically, a couple of different variants, and you're balancing by gunnery and piloting skill.
Yeah, absolutely. So I should have probably revisited at the start, but yeah. So for the format, the idea is you'd have kind of a themed list for each round. So each round there'll be a theme. So it might be, you know, mechs that you might find on Solaris, or it might be, you know, it could be in this case Mad Cat. They've all just got the word Mad or Cat in the name. But the idea is, yeah, the idea is to build mechs that are interesting. They might have slight pros and cons, but it's, again, the idea is to push people's ability to pilot the mech as much as it is their ability to kind of put a good list together and pick out what makes a good mech on paper.
And I noticed that you've actually got, or they're all available in plastic.
Yeah, I felt that was really important for people.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I think in a lot of tournaments that are the open format, it's for seasoned veteran players, and they try and put really obscure mechs in there to give people something new and something exciting, and they've got to kind of dig through the record sheet and work out if it's good or not. And for me, trying to create a tournament that, again, is designed to bring people together, you know, it's almost like a novice tournament. It's going to be a great place for people to have their first kind of competitive experience. I don't want that to be a barrier. I don't want people to look through and see a Bandersnatch and think, well, what on earth is that? Or really, you know, just get kind of bogged down and kind of zoned out before they've even got past the first mech sheets. So yeah, they're all available in plastic. They're all quite well-known mechs. I've tried to reduce the amount of kind of weird tech on there. So you won't find, you know, random TSM. You won't find, you know, really obscure kind of, you know, chameleon LPS or anything like that. It's meant to be accessible.
Equally, there's a few odd little interesting variants. Like, you don't often see Battlemaster K4s.
Yeah. Well, I had to put something interesting in there. So you'll see there's kind of a progression. There's different eras in each round. But yeah, again, it's about having something for everyone. So, you know, there's a lot of players where, you know, they've never stepped out of 3025, or they've never stepped out of the Clan Invasion. And so, you know, I don't want them to look at the list and be like, oh my goodness, this is all ill clan stuff. You know, what's a plasma rifle do? I don't know. You know, I don't want any part of this, you know. But equally, you've got a lot of players where, you know, they've played 3025, they've played Clan Invasion to death. They want something new. They want something more exciting. So we've tried to put a bit of everything in there for everyone.
How easy are you finding it to draw, as a demo agent, how easy are you finding it drawing people out of 3025 Clan Invasion and onwards? Does dangling the lore carrot, or is it the cool tech carrot that works better?
Yeah, the cool tech is definitely the draw, I think, for people. It's really tricky because it depends on that person's context as well. If you've got someone who that's all they've known, you know, is that kind of 3025, and they see that as the purity, you know, this is the gold standard, then yeah, I get that. And, you know, it's still fun to play, still good to play. But yeah, it's definitely the tech and kind of gradually eking them out and saying, oh, well, if we go to this era, you know, the only difference is, you know, you've got a PPC that does 15 damage an hour. Oh, well, the only real difference is, you know, you can fight LRMs or SRMs. So that's the carrot we're using.
PPC no longer has a minimum range.
So yeah, it's
which is quite nice, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And it's cool as well. But I think, you know, it's a game that people play to enjoy. And if, you know, if you're really comfortable playing a certain era and that's what you enjoy, then, you know, more power to you as well. Like, I don't think there's, you know, I know CGL, they're pushing the ill-clan era now. They're saying, this is the standard, this is what people should play with. But, you know, you play the game the way you enjoy it. So, you know, we're all playing it to have fun. And if that's your version of fun, then go for it.
Yep. Absolutely. I could not agree more. Right. Now, the other reason of having you on is you're slightly more of a classic expert than I am, because I had my first time of classic in 2 years last night. And I have to say, Colin handed me my rear end on a plate.
Yeah, he's some guy.
I was very... He's a remarkably good player. If you're listening, Colin, I'm sorry if your ears are burning. We'll get you on the show eventually. But I thought you and I probably would be... ideally suited to have a look at the new stuff that's just been announced.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to.
There is some fascinating stuff coming out, and I have just carefully bookmarked it and lost it, as you do.
No,
but these things always happen, don't they?
Yeah. I think it's really interesting, though, that they're coming through this core rulebook, and I've played in a lot of different groups. You know, I've travelled all over the UK trying to find out how people play in different areas and what I can learn, what I can bring back with me to the UAE and stuff. And I've never played the same rules in any two groups. So it's really interesting how this kind of, you know, whether that's the way people interpret optional rules or different ways of doing things, different erratas, you know, things like that. I've never been and played the same rules in any two locations.
Yeah, it's always interesting. You look at, particularly more so, I think, in classic tournaments, you look at the rules back and invariably there's a section that says the following optional rules, .. And it's never quite the same set.
No,
there are some that are almost always in there. You'll almost always see easy stand. You'll almost always see floating crits, but not always. And then it's sort of the certain degree of pick and choose of what comes apart from that. So anyways, we have, for those who've been living under a rock for the last few weeks, we have a brand new starter box, a brand new core box, which is basically a game of Armored Combat, and we also have a new... essentially, it's the new version of the Battlebait Manual, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it.
Yeah. So, starting with... and the other thing is, I think this is... Catalyst, very much cards on the table. Welcome to the Ilclan era. This starter box is not a 2030-25 tech. You know, it's no longer the Griffin and the Vindicator. It's the Hammerhead and the Contia, which don't even exist in 2025. But they're quite a fun little pair of mechs.
Yeah, definitely. They've the Contia obviously a bit of a terror if it can get in TSM and melee range, and the Hammerhead probably the only mech or one of the few mechs that can take one of those claws to the face.
Well, I think there's a careful bit of pairing there. It's probably one of them is probably the only mech that can't take the other's head off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or other way around. The Hammerhead's claws are... Is it the Hammerhead's claws? Do we not have Hammerhead's claws? Those claws are going through most things, but perhaps not, as the saying goes. Other than that, they seem to have done the usual. There's a quick start set of rules. There's those similar half cheats. But they do seem to have worked a different... Instead of going with the whole you learn intro tech... as your starter game, they seem to have there seems to be some kind of layered learning where you go through scenarios and you pick up more rules and more weapons as you go, like pulse lasers, depleting.
Yeah, absolutely, and that makes sense, right? Like whenever I run a starter game with people, I won't pick any mechs that are going to overheat, and I'll pick a perfectly flat map because you know no one wants to spend their first game trying to visualize how the sight lines work on hills and partial cover and stuff like that.
Absolutely, and then we come up to the core box, which is basically if you weren't very clear that this is not 2025 or even Clan Invasion anymore. It gets very obvious about here. I mean, there's some fabulous mechs in here. I've always had a soft spot for the Gauss rifle with legs. I'm sorry, I mean the Hollander, which is such an amazing looking mech.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we've got a Solitaire and a Hollander. We've got an Ezreus and an Uziel. We've got a Rakshaza and a Vulture Mark IV, and a Regent and a Madcap Mark II. We're slowly working our way through the Madcap variants because the Savage Wolf, which is the Madcap Mark IV, came out in plastic not so long ago. So we're nearly there with all the Madcaps. And you're probably quite familiar with some of these mechs because some of them come from MechWarrior 4.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The Madcap Mark II, the Uziel, those are just absolute classics for me. Those are, like, iconic, you know. But what's really interesting as well is the mechs, you know, they're not clearly defined in terms of, like, you know, your master unit lists or anything like that. I know a lot of people like to build their lists, you know, around kind of the availability, but these are kind of all over the place too.
Yeah, I was thinking that actually, in much the same way that if you look at Game of Armored Combat box set, those are they're the ones that you see that are pretty much ubiquitous on most Innosphere forces, with possible, less so in the Alpha Strike books, because things like the Wraith are a little bit more, or the Raven are a little bit more faction leaning. But
yeah,
this lot are much like the Games of Armored Combat in that everybody's got one somewhere. Yeah.
What's really cool as well is they seem to have paired them off really well as well. I know there's not always a bit of parity in the Game of Armored Combat box, but here, you know, right the way up, you've got your light mech is a little guy with a massive gun. You've got your fast jumpy mediums. You've got your kind of 5-8 cavalry heavies, and then you've got your 3-5 big bricks that just, you know, shoot and wade forward. You know, they've really paired them up really, really evenly, I think.
Yeah. And I suspect you're going to discover that if you split those up by BV or by PV, depending on what you're playing, that you can do pretty much the same as you can with the Game of Armored Combat box and produce two very balanced forces.
Yeah,
but more to the point, two very balanced forces which replay different tactical styles.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot in there.
There's also a lot of, looking at the tech list, looking at Catalyst page, actually this is Goonhammer, it's not not the Catalyst page, just for a change. They've got ferrolamella, PPC capacitors, partial wings, hardened armor, stealth armor, TSM, and weapons. So that, you know, you've got a whole range of choices here.
Welcome to the Ilplan era, baby.
Well, yeah, come and have fun with some weird stuff. And I think I'm actually really impressed, and I will freely confess that when I gave up BattleTech to do awkward things like get married and have a child, I was very much of the clans are bad and evil and you should only play 30-25, and here I am advocating ill clans, so there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? You'd be amazed how many people I think would be in a similar situation. This might be what they need to kind of push them into. Oh, well, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, why not? And as the guys from Goonhammer make a very good point, these are the mechs that new players are going to be fielding because they're the ones they've got. They've bought this box. You're not going to just fall back on 30-25 tech, because most of these won't do 30-25 tech. Apparently there's a new lore booklet which is going to include a guide of how to pick a faction and a play style, which is interesting.
Yeah,
I know some people, I'd be very interested to see how that works. I mean, playing Colin last night, Colin is very much, I am going to walk up to you to point blank range and I'm going to shoot the living daylights out of you, and I'm very much a fan of hanging back and peppering people with long-range missiles, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But the big announcement of the three, I mean, yes, so those are interesting, obviously, because there's a big shift forward into the Ilclad era, which, they face it, it's the way Catalyst have worked since pretty much the point I got into the hobby, when because the point I got into the hobby, the Warrior trilogy had just come out, which had basically jumped the world forward to the Fourth Succession War from the end of the third, and then Wolves on the Border, which is just pre the Fourth Succession War, and then you get Heir to the Dragon, which pushes you forward to the War of 3039. Then the clans come out, and basically there's been big lore-based jumps. To be fair, to allow Catalyst to sell more toys, but done in a distinctly less mercenary way than I think the likes of 40K do it.
Absolutely.
And,
I mean,
they keep. Go on.
No, so I was going to say, even looking at this change list, I mean, this would be kind of a larger ratter in some of those bigger games, or some of those other games, I should say, not bigger.
Yeah, it's not really a. But this is the big thing, isn't it? The new core rulebook, which is basically the BattleTech manual. So it's fundamentally the core BattleTech rules plus some stuff for BattleTech support assets for vehicles and stuff, rather than vehicle record sheets, which is, some people's mileages may vary on that. They were an interesting addition to Mercenaries, and I've not used them in Classic. I have used them in Alpha Strike. I've used air support assets in Alpha Strike, and I quite like them. there are some interesting rule changes.
Yeah,
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. Also, shout out the super heavies and the tripods and the quads getting in there as well. All good to see.
Oh, yes, please. I want an Ares. I so want an Ares.
Oh, definitely.
Actually, to be fair, the thing I really want, and I've said for a while, and this is a bit 3025, and I'm unashamed, I do not care, is I want to build Cochrane's Goliaths.
just have them swarmed by fire starters.
Oh yeah, but it basically involves how many Goliaths can I get my hands on, just for fun. So let's just have a peek. There's a nice PDF which I will link in the show notes, on the Catalyst website, which is the developer's notes for what they've done with the playtest and what's going in the new core rulebook. And there's a change log around about page 7. Is that 7? Yes, it's a 7 on its end. I don't want to have any trouble. There's some quite interesting things. As you say, we've got super heavies, we've got tripods, which are now part of core, which they weren't before. They were in Total Warfare, I think, if not something even more obscure. Front load initiative is now official. What's your views on that one?
Yeah, I love that. That's something we play with all the time. I'd take that over floating crits if I could, as an optional rule that should become standard. Like, that for me is just such a no-brainer. It's so feels bad. If you've got a one mech advantage and you take down your opponent's mech and you win initiative, you get to move three three at the end after you've seen all of his moves. That's not good for anyone.
Isn't it? No. But that one, I think that's good. I'm also amused by the water changes. Water has suddenly stopped being quite so lethal.
Yeah, how many maps is that going to open up for people? If you look at that Savannah map pack and you've got all those, like, those river deltas and stuff like that, some of those Tookie-Yid maps,
which are all level 1, aren't they? Or in some cases, level 0.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, loads of those maps are going to become so much more playable without just jump jetting everywhere all the time. It's going to be a big deal, I think. I think it's going to bring a lot more fun to those maps and a lot more variety to the way people play.
Yeah, I quite agree. I think if you're not one of those people who tends to bump up gunnery skills to get around the fact that your jumpy mech is being penalised for bouncing around the table, being able to actually get through rivers and the like without taking penalties and piloting skill rolls and movement is going to be, I think, going to make, you're right, it's going to make for a much more interesting game on that kind of map. I mean, the big is it one of the Savannah maps is very wet, if memory serves.
Yeah, there's a few of them where it's just river deltas, and that's punishing. Yeah. If you roll that on a random table, that's in Mercenaries or something, it's
there's one of the Tookie-Yid maps as well, isn't there, which is just a massive river delta.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that river crossing, and it's just, yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. We played a Tookie-Yid campaign, and I had, you know, it was the Nova Cats were coming out of the lake to surprise the Comstar supply depot, and in my first turn, I had two mechs fail their PSRs trying to walk out of the water, and it was it, you know, they'd made this whole journey underwater for, you know, miles and miles and miles, and then as soon as they get to the shoreline, they just topple over, and yeah, it's not cool. It's not very fun in Battletech to fall over walking in water.
No, it's not. I mean, it's not fun falling over at all, but let's face it. We've got interesting changes looking through. There's some changes to partial cover for charges and height advantages. And
I think that partial cover is going to be a huge deal.
You do? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, if you've got a sniper up on the high ground, there's no way you can hide from them, really. You know, if they've got good vision, you can't flank them very easily. You can't really get protection from them very easily. They're in a really powerful position, and I think if they remove that rule, it's going to change the way the game moves a lot. It's going to make it a lot easier.
And the moment I had yesterday when I was standing one level up from another mech, they're still getting partial cover from me at that point. Is my reading of that?
That's how the new rule's going to be. Whereas at the moment, if you've got that height advantage, you know, no one gets partial cover. And I guess it breaks down to, you know, how it looks on the table with those kind of hex walls of, oh, it's suddenly upper level, and how it would be in real life or something. I guess we're looking down a hill at a valley at someone. But You know, for me, I quite like it, but it's definitely something I'd want to test out first before committing. And I think the developers have said that it might be something they play test and change before the rules come out. But it's going to make a big difference. It's certainly going to be the only advantage to getting high ground now is just going to be being able to see stuff. There's no other, you know, there's no other mechanical advantage to that.
No, indeed. And then there's a few fun and interesting changes here. Club being hit by a club now causes you to take a PSR. That's kind of seems reasonable.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you've gone to the effort to pick one up.
And since one of my favourite special pilot abilities in Alpha Strike is, and I forgot what it's called, the one that allows you to go through rubble, pick up things and hit people with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, that's...
They've now made that slightly more official you can now search rubble for clubs, which is quite cool.
Yeah, it's a weird rule set. It takes up a surprising bit of space, the rules for club attacks and picking up clubs and stuff like that. It's why that 12, if you're blowing a limb off, is so important on the crit table. You can pick up that limb and batter people. But yeah, I'm glad that it's a bit more. I'm glad that they're streamlining it a bit, and I'm glad that it's not as difficult to get a club to batter people with.
Let's face it, it happens in the stories all the time.
Yeah,
it's almost a trope, isn't it?
Yeah, the Game of Armor combat box. You've got that big battle master swinging that catapult leg above his head. Like that's iconic for me.
That's not just any big battle master. That's the crown prince. That's the prince himself, isn't it? That's Hansa Davy. Is it Hansa, isn't it?
It's one of the boys. You've caught me lacking here on the lore.
It's the famous thing from somewhere in Warrior where the where some death commandos turn up and he basically goes, "Well, I'm here and there's a battle master over there. I better go and sort the problem out myself." That's one of the things that's sidetracking a little is one of the things I do love about BattleTech, whether it's a conscious decision or not, is that the world has gone back to that point where leaders put on armor and get stuck in.
Yeah, that feudalism.
If you
really
imagine
that
feudalism thing where, you know, Richard III died on the battlefield, and we're sort of back to that, and I kind of like that. It's a certain fun something, isn't it? Now the big change, which is going to really cause an awful lot of people whose mechs don't have case to be very happy, is there's now an upper limit on ammo explosions.
Yeah, I think that's going to be that's. I know there's a lot of happy and unhappy people about that change, but to me, I'm happy for it. I mean, your mech's still not in a good place. You take 20 points internal damage. I mean, that's. You're not having.
No,
a good day
there are
anymore.
Very most... few mechs where 20 points will not take out a location.
Yeah, but the flip side as well is, you know, those battle masters where you've got that ton of machine gun ammo for your one machine gun. I mean, they've removed ammo dumping, so I guess, you know, you can't just dump ammo turn at the end of turn one and just.
But you
know,
can half load now.
You can half load. Yeah, it's still going to take a lot to get through 50 rounds, but yeah, I get you. But yeah, I think it's a nice balance in terms of, you know, you're not just dumping that ammo at the end of the turn and just hoping it's not there, and you know you get to play with the record sheets as they are a bit more. But yeah, I think it's definitely. I think it makes for a more fun game. You know, you still have a bad time. Your mech's still suddenly crippled, but it's not like you've just lost a 3,000 BV mech because you know it had a machine gun in there or something.
Speaking as an old school BattleTech player whose favorite mech is the Battlemaster 1G, I love this rule. I have died to 200-point machine gun ammo explosions before now. It's not fun.
No. And again, part of it is, you know, it's a huge narrative element for people, right? Like, you know, they're telling the story as it unfolds on the battlefield. And again, that's something I love about BattleTech is, you know, you're telling a story as you play. It's not just a win at all costs, can I roll better dice than you? It's, you know, it's that narrative element to it. And having a huge, you know, again, like I'm telling, you know, as people play their intro games, I'm trying to describe, I bring a Shadowhawk because it's going to explode. I bring a Commando because it's going to explode. I know I'm going to get one ammo ripoff. And, you know, just describing how it's, you know, this big ammunition explode just blows out from inside their chest and bits of shrapnel everywhere. And you've just got two legs standing. And, you know, that's a huge part of the game. And you still get that here. You know, it's not disappeared. It's not gone. But yeah, I'm in favour of it. I like it a lot.
I also note Well, I'm just looking through these and picking out odd things that suddenly struck me. The facing after fall table has gone.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. What's your take on that?
Isn't it? I don't know, really. I'm torn. I mean, I spent an awful lot of yesterday falling over. I made a lot of rolls on that table. I don't know. That one I'm really genuinely torn by, I think.
Yeah, I mean, my perspective is I get it from in terms of making it kind of more consistent with the game. Like the amount, you know, if you've worked your way into a rear position on someone, you manage to kick them from the rear and then suddenly they fall over and they're facing the front and you can't go through that rear table anymore. I get that. Or if you've been working your way through someone's front table and they fall over and now the rear's facing you and it's like, well, now I've got to go through another load of armor. I get that. You know, it's not something I would care about, really. I mean, it's part of the game and I'm used to doing it and I like it and it adds a bit of randomness in it. But it's not something, I mean, it's not something I'm going to cry over.
No, it's not. I was just, I was being absolutely mauled yesterday and I made so many rolls on that table. I was just, it was upmost in my mind that I was quite surprised to see it.
Yeah, one thing I love going through this as well is how many of rules in here are ones that like you just completely forgot existed, like standing up for heat, you know, standing up, each attempt creates one heat. Like I can't remember ever playing that. I'm sure I've read it somewhere. I'm sure I've tried to put it in my brain, but there's so many rules here where they've just, you know, they've just taken stuff out where you're just like, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of them. The Pious Team of Skill modifiers, reducing the PSR for DFA is quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, DFA is, it's a meme move at the moment, right? Like you do it to be funny or to have a laugh or, you know, because you've won the game already. No one does it seriously.
Or you do it because you're in a Highlander and you're supposed to.
Yeah. Legally obligated. Yeah, absolutely.
It's actually in that little contract you signed when you were handed over the mech. You must DFA.
Absolutely, especially as an urban mech around. But yeah, I don't know. I've never taken a death from above attack seriously. Have you? Have you ever done one and been like, this is the way I'm going to win this game. This is going to be the turning point. It's a meme move, isn't it, really?
I have.
Go on, tell us your death from above story. Did it land?
No. But it was there because I wanted to displace the target off the objective.
And you couldn't charge?
I wasn't going to get there with the available move, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
It was okay. Easy to jump.
That makes sense. That makes sense. But yeah.
But it's talking not of, a common thing to pull, is it?
No. Talking of melee though, like the kick and the punch attacks, I really like the change there. I kind of got brought up. Everyone's telling me, you know, always be kicking. Punches aren't any use. But kicks are going to be a -1 instead now for the base target modifier, and punches are going to be -1 as well. So I'm looking forward to punching people a bit more, and in the game.
Bring
in
the violence. Yeah, sounds fun. What else did I spot here? There's some interesting stuff. Long list of weapons that have been added, and in a few isolated cases removed. Woebetide, unfortunately for anyone with a hatchet man or an axe man, there is no longer a full head ejection system in the main rules.
Oh, devastating.
I'm bearing in mind, you know, my favourite unit is Belfagan Rangers, and one of their special force abilities, according to the new Mercs handbook, actually, is that despite not actually being officially a Fedcom unit, because they are one of the Fedcom's favourite mercenary units, they can wave money at Fedcom, and Fedcom will send them hatchet men and axemen. I mean, the full head ejection system is kind of cool. But it's a little bit of a cosmetic event. I just, from a point of view of being a hacksman and hatchet man and axeman fan, it's a bit of a shame to see it go.
Yeah, in campaigns as well. I mean, you know, like campaigns are great. They're loads of fun. You know, mercenaries is thriving. You know, loads of people there. Their weekly BattleTech game is right. We'll sit down. We'll try and crack out, you know, two or three games of Hinterlands. So yeah, and I get it. Like I wasn't trying to be sarcastic at all. Like it's one of those things where I think it really adds a lot to the game. It, you know, it adds a lot of flavor without necessarily having to change the way the mech works day to day.
And but there's also being a little more sensible with special ammo, because that was always a bit of a minefield, wasn't it? I mean, thunder munitions aside, a little bit of a minefield.
Yeah. There's some good stuff in there. I think trying to make things a bit more relevant, like the arm, you know, with an autocannon before. I mean, the big thing with the autocannon, of course, is they get that first crit free, which, you know, if you've got an AC-20 and you're packing, you know, all those crit slots, that's a huge deal. But yeah,
and ultra autocannons don't jam anymore.
Yeah. I had that in turn one in the game a couple weeks ago, and it was like, yeah, that's a big deal. I feel autocannon ultra ACs are like, they're penalized enough. Like, you know, it's that if you're landing on threes or fours or something at a prone target and you're still having to roll 8+ on the cluster table, that's a penalty enough. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
But you've obviously had recent experience with ultra ACs hitting every time, or so I hear.
Colin's been telling tales, has he? Yes, the ultra AC-20 on that beast was not nice. I don't think he'd ever fail. It never missed, and I think he only failed the cluster roll once.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, the autocannon ammo, though. The armor piercings come through, and they've kind of brought that down from the playtest. It was a bit that the AC-2s and the AC-5s apparently were a bit much, so I'm glad to see that they're kind of responding to feedback and players, and, you know, they're tweaking stuff based on that. It's great to see.
Yeah, I mean, it does various. There's been a lot of different opinions expressed about it, I think.
Strong
don't
opinions.
Like some of the changes. Strong. Well, when has BattleTech ever not generated strong opinions? For sake. I'm just quietly amused. I don't know if you've noticed, but there's quite a few things that have been changed from 10+ on 2d6 to 1 on 1d6, which is exactly the same odds. It's still 1 in 6. It's just a different roll.
Ooh, what have you got there?
Physical weapon retractable blade destruction check change from 2d6 10+ to 1 on 1d6. 10+ on 2d6 is 6 out of 36, which is 1 in 6. So there's no actual change. It's just a 1 dice roll rather than 2 dice roll.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one as well. The targeting computer, that's on a 1d6 now, right? I love that idea because when you're rolling for a targeting computer and you're aiming at a certain location and you have to end up rolling like 4 2d6 in a row sometimes, like that's I'm really glad we can say right, here's my to hit roll, great, I've hit, now I get to roll my 1d6 to see if I hit where I wanted. I like that it's separated out, and I like that it's going to add a lot of clarity, I think, to people.
Yeah, and it is going to give you that nice advantage with the targeting computer, and a far more sensible process to get there, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, 6, 7, and 8 is just, it's not used anywhere else. It's just it works, and it's still 2d6, but yeah, I much prefer this.
Yeah, I mean, you also get it if you're trying to hit someone while they're down, and it's the same role for that, I think, isn't it?
It happened
to me yesterday. as you can tell, I got absolutely pummeled yesterday. So yeah, I think going forward, I'm generally happy. As I said, I'm not as big a classic player as you are, but I think that there's nothing here that causes me to go, oh my God, what?
Yeah.
To be fair, there's quite a few weapons here that I look at and go, you know, I don't think I've ever played with a mech with one of those.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, welcome to the Ill-Clan, but the biggest change, the biggest thing from the playtest and the biggest thing from the usual rules that I think is going to really revolutionise the game is the mission pack. And being able to just say to someone, like, do you want to play BattleTech tomorrow? And they say, sure. You want to play 6,000 BV? Sure. And that's it. That's it. You're done. You can play your game. There's no, okay, well, you know, what era do we want to use and what type of mission and, you know, what objectives should we use and, you know, should we roll for weather and what do we do here? And, you know, are we going to walk on? Is it 3 hexes on? Just the fact you can just rock up with a couple of different lists and find someone to play with is going to be amazing for the game.
And the answers to those questions are in the rule book. Rather than being, absolutely. And this is, I think, something that is going to happen with Alpha Strike as well, I'm sure.
Yeah,
there are a few missions in the Alpha Strike book, but I think there isn't really. I mean, there's a draft set of those rules being out for a while, but there isn't. If you're a new player and you don't know where to look for that, there's nothing really in the rule book, and until now for Classic either, that allows you to say, right, we'll go to the missions page and we'll go, we're playing that.
Yeah, and I think mean,
that's,
like, again,
that's great. Anything that makes pickup games with complete strangers easier, makes your life and my life easier as demo agents.
Yeah, definitely. And like, you know, you look at the Game of Armor combat box, you know, when you open that up, you open it up and there's three missions in it. I think there's three missions. And the first one, they're basically all narrative missions. They're really narrative and it gives you a great sense of, oh, this is a bit of the world they're living in. But you finish those missions and you're like, well, what do I do now? You know, there's no you know, how do I play a fair balanced game with my friend? I don't know enough about the game to build a narrative story and balance the BV. And, you know, this battle master's trying to get off the board edge and it's got, you know, exactly this much armor missing off it in these locations. I don't know how to balance that. So the fact people can just pick up this core rulebook and just play and play and play, and there's different mission types and there's different ways of doing things. And, you know, even just from a list building perspective, the fact that people don't know exactly what mission they're going to play when they're building their list, I think is a bit more kind of fluffy to a degree. But also it's forcing people to not go as optimized. You know, you're going to see far less of these kind of the meme lists and, you know, oh, well, I know it's going to be this is the mission and we've agreed on it beforehand, so I'm just going to build all snipers. Or, oh, this is the mission beforehand. I'm just going to run a load of fast clan swarm or something. So I love that it's forcing people to be balanced. Yeah.
And also, as that little missions chapter note says, BV is now a first-class concept.
Yeah, it's so weird that that's something that hasn't existed officially, you know, in that sense. No, like, it's not in the rule book. And people don't know how to access it. Like, you know, how do you find BV? I go onto MechBay and that tells me the BV, and it's, you know, it's crazy that it's kind of...
It's actually written in a little corner of the official sheet. It's just people go, and what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah, but then again, where do you find your sheets?
In the box.
That's
true.
Which
is all very well. But, and here's the big but, and now I've bought a force pack. Where's my BV?
Yeah, absolutely.
And hopefully this will work out in the as more and more people hopefully get drawn into the hobby with the new core boxes. Hopefully people this will make pickup games and general force balancing not something that you require to have. I mean, really, to be honest, there's a point where we're at the point where if somebody in your group has to know what's going on there to get balanced games.
Yeah, definitely. And really, this is it's such a huge opportunity as well for clubs to kind of springboard. You know, people who are in the tabletop wargaming space. You know, BattleTech's going to be on the front site of their favorite website. You know, people are going to be talking about it. It's going to be, oh, there's a new BattleTech out. Oh, yeah, I remember that. I wonder what this new version's like. And, you know, me and you know it's going to be the same sort of game, but I think it's going to be huge for kind of for everyone to be able to springboard off and really take advantage of and grow the game.
But as I think Randall said, one of the, I don't know if you have any of the videos from Adepticon you watched, but the entire 40-year history of BattleTech, there's probably been 5% of the rules have changed. So even if you're someone who used to play it back when I started, or back when you started, which is a little bit old, but, or, you know, no matter how far back you were, you with a reasonably quick skim of the rules, and okay, if you're that far behind someone to just say, and this is what's changed and you need to know, you can be up and running as if you'd never been away, which is also a good thing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, it's where I'm at, you know, with our community and stuff, drawing in older players who played it historically. I mean, that's a huge part of my target demographic.
Oh, gotcha. I mean, we're doing it at the club. I mean, Martin Hilder, who's just started playing Alpha Strike with us, was, I think, used to play it back in many years ago, and you know, we just keep pulling him in, and it's brilliant. I love it. It's such, I think, one of the things that you and I both probably as demo agents, I don't know if we see it more than others, but just the fact that it's such an easy game, even Classic is an easy game. I mean, I've always said, and I think you've been on the receiving end, I can teach you Alpha Strike in 5 minutes. Classic's not that, Classic with the basics is not that much harder.
No, it's not. I mean, you know, like, you know, an intro game will run through, okay, well, this is how you move, and this is, you know, the I provide like a, you know, a whiteboard with the gator thing on it, and they just go through that checklist and add those numbers up for the gunnery and the attack modifiers, the target modifiers, other stuff, the range. And then, you know, they're going within, you know, 20 minutes, they're going and working it out. And it's, yeah, it's the crunch is there, but it's all optional to a degree, I suppose.
Yeah, but I think yeah, who'd do anything else? I'm still sold on it as a game to teach. Just that depth is going to keep me happy for months, years, decades.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope so.
Right.
I hope so.
Me too. So, plans going forward then, apart from the Lincoln Open, you're going to come down and see us at the club sometime?
Oh, I'm desperately trying to get down there as soon as I can. Yeah, absolutely. Get some games in. Get some games with Colin, especially. You know, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see who comes out on top there. But yeah, it's gonna be. It's gonna hopefully be another UK tour for me.
That'll be great.
As I said, I might be one of the few people with a positive win loss ratio against Colin in Alpha Strike at the moment. I've played him once, and I might keep it at that.
I think young Josh might be running you close.
Ooh.
He's a tough little customer, is Josh. It certainly isn't me, I can tell you that. Certainly not a classic either. Right. I think we've hit the hour mark, which is always about where I like to stop it, mostly because people get bored. And I I'm slightly biased in that my trip up to my dad's is nearly 2 hours. Up the A15, and I tend to get through one episode of Of Mechs and Men on the way up and another one on the way down if I'm not caught up, but I try and keep these down to about an hour. So have we got anything else we need to talk about?
No, I think we've covered all the points we outlined, but yeah, just new rulebook changes are great. If you want to play Battletech in the Middle East, I'm at Battletech UAE, but yeah, just love Battletech. Let's keep it going.
Is your email the best way of contacting you if you are out there, or is there a website or a
Best place to go, my email would be battletechuae@gmail.com. Or if you want to see what we get up to, we've got the Instagram page, which is at battletechuae, so you can see what we're getting up to out in the Middle
East. I'm sensing a theme here.
Well, it's, you know, it's that search engine optimization, isn't it? I want people to type in, you know, Battletech Dubai, Battletech in the UAE, and something pop up, because, you know, I did it a year ago and there's nothing, and now we're, for most people, we're on the first page of the Google results, which is, you know, for me, that's a huge deal that it's accessible. You know, one search and you can find somewhere to play these days.
I've got to try that. Battletech UAE hits return. And the first hit is your Instagram page.
Let's go.
The rest of and your Instagram page again. And then the rest of mostly the Uraeus, which is a particular, which happens to have the letter abbreviations UAE.
It is. It's a weird mech as well. I've tried running it.
You'll be your mascot mech, I can't help feeling. Oh, no, there's I've also just found a mention of your Urban Wrecked event.
Oh, yeah, unfortunately cancelled at the last minute.
Oh, that was a crying shame, wasn't it? Right, it's been fabulous to talk to you again, and hopefully we can actually catch up in person. If I won't make the Lincoln Open, mostly because I will be going to have to go all the way up to Hull to see my dad that day, but I will probably pop my poke my nose in on the way back down, see how it's going, report on it for the podcast. And hopefully, if you're, well, kind of, in some ways, I hope you're back where you should be, but if you're not and you make it to Crown Tourney, we'd love to see you there.
Oh, I'd love to be able to make it down for that. That'd be amazing. I'm sure we'll catch up at some point. I'm on that teacher timetable, so I'll be here all summer at least.
Brilliant. Right, my guest has been John Reed, to whom many thanks, and hopefully we'll catch up again. So, let's get you updated with all the events and directory updates. Starting this weekend, as mentioned last time, we have the Scottish Open up at Nam Mackay Halls in Pollock Shields, Glasgow. Again, that's a Battletech Open event. So it's, as John and I discussed previously, it's a fixed choice of mechs from shortlists. It's a serious test of your Battletech skill. So if you fancy hiking up to Scotland,
That one's for you. Same weekend, same day, in fact, April the 25th, Wirral Walk-On. On the Wirral, it's in Bevington, and that is from 10 till 4, like all good war game shows. The only Battletech link I'm aware of is that Ralpartha will be there, and they will have Battletech. Now, whether that means they're running demos or they're just bringing stock, I don't know, but check it out, find out. Following weekend, Saturday, May the 2nd, as discussed, the Peterborough Crown Tourney. It's still not too late to put your list in or to sign up. Links are on the website. Coming up at the end of the month, May the 29th to May the 31st, is the annual Bunfight. That is UK Games Expo. We will be putting on a whole bunch of games, including the UK Open, the UK Crown Tourney, a List Builder Alpha Strike tournament, a chance to play Aces, and all manner of other things. Those details should be going up very, very soon. Please keep an eye on the Discord and on this website. As soon as I have more information, I will post it. Then, moving into June, on June the 7th, a group I've not come across before, the Yorkshire Renegades, based in Market Wheaton in Yorkshire, which is not far from my old stomping grounds, are running an Alpha Strike narrative event entitled The Domination of Nunki, which is a small planet in Curita space, apparently. There's an event and ticketing details linked on the website. The one thing I don't have is what era it's set in, but if I find that out, I'll update. Moving on to June the 27th, there is an event at Dark Sphere in Shepherd's Bush, which is another Alpha Strike narrative event. By gum, they're popular this time out. Running from 11 to 8, there's a Facebook event with the details and a player pack also linked from the site. Then, as John and I discussed on the interview, Lincoln Battletech Open is August 1st. On past form, I'm expecting an absolute glut of events in August, because that's what's happened in the past. This is, as previously discussed, Imps Gaming in Lincoln. It's another open event, so it'll be the open format with a choice of mechs from a themed selection. And yeah, if you like the open format, you're in luck this month, this year. There's lots of them happening in the UK, including the European Battletech Championship in Hicks Hall in Leeds. That's my first guest, Andy Dickinson's stomping grounds, August 28th to 30th. Again, it's an open event, you know what to expect. And then Heroine Wargame Show on September the 6th. There will be some Alpha Strike and some Classic there. It's just a good, friendly show. We've not yet managed to attract any traders who stock Battletech, but we keep trying. Okay, so that's it for events. A couple of updates in the directory. One is actually a change. And the other is a new one. The West Allotment Gamers, who used to play up on Tyneside, have now moved to the Northern Alliance Games Store, which is nearly in the middle of Newcastle. They meet on alternate Fridays from 6:30 to 10-ish, and they are both Classic and Alpha Strike, and their next meeting is May the 1st, so you can extrapolate from there. On the new front, we have another group in Nottingham. Always helps. Dyson Dealers Gaming Club. They meet in the Trent Room of the Embankment Pub, which is not that far from Trent Bridge Cricket Ground, playing both Alpha Strike and Classic on Tuesdays from 5:30 to 10 o'clock. And I think that's about it. So I guess that only remains for me to, as ever, wish you a good fun time gaming and roll good dice, because I never do. Tales from the Periphery is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License.
In short, give us some credit. Don't make money out of it. And if you make an adaptation of it, you must share it under the same license. Have fun.
And for those of you who've actually listened through the end titles, the thing that was wrong with episode 15 that I asked about in the notes to episode 16, and clearly nobody bothered, it had the old theme music, because I picked up the wrong template for the show. So you had the big grungy heavy metal guitar opening rather than the percussion and harmonica opening. Oh well, never mind.